This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
He's the author of 10 books, including The Party's Over, Peak Everything, and The End of Growth. He's also a driving force and senior fellow at the Post-Carbon Institute. You know, I wanted to give Richard Heinberg hell for wasting resources on an 8-pound monster book about wasting resources. The book, Energy, Overdevelopment, and the Delusion of Endless Growth, is so big, I had to clear off my desk just to look at it. But then, I got sucked in by 2-foot photos of the nasty industrial mess that is hiding behind our consumer lifestyle, our cars and our smartphones and all that. Why didn't I know that it's so bad out there? So, Richard Heinberg, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Good to be talking with you again, Alex.
Well, Richard, why did the Post-Carbon Institute put all this paper and ink into a play?
The book actually is a project that was brought to us by the Foundation for Deep Ecology. They've produced a series of similar sort of coffee table-sized books going all the way back to one called Clear Cut. It's a strategy that seems to work well because people actually can see, as you say, with big color images, the results for the environment of, basically modern industrial life. And, sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words. So these books are always features of activist campaigns, whether it's for CAFO, which was a book that they published a couple of years ago on confined animal feeding operations, or clear-cutting forests or mountaintop removal, coal mining. These books are typically gifted to environmental organizations to use in their activist efforts. So Foundation for Deep Ecology partnered with us on this one and brought us the project sort of half-finished, and then we brought together some of our fellows to flesh out some of the content on energy literacy and so on. And the result is this, as you say, big 8-pound bouncing baby of a book.
Well, I was really impressed. I was struck. I was moved by the photos. And then I began to wonder, well, why don't we see these images in the media or even in our daily lives? We don't encounter this, you know, acres and acres and acres stretching out to the horizon of wrecked land. Do you think the images are censored, or is it because we really don't want to look?
Well, the images are hard to get in some cases. For example, the tar sands in Alberta, everybody kind of knows that, you know, it must look pretty nasty producing that stuff, you know, digging into the arboreal forest and tundra to get this gooey bitumen out that has to then be refined and sent through pipelines and so on. But, you know, unless you rent a plane and fly over, you're not going to really get the full picture of it. Certainly the companies like Suncor that do the mining have no interest in publicizing what it really looks like. So, you know, very few people actually have seen it from a bird's eye point of view. But if you look at the photo in the book, it's a vision of hell. You know, it's a landscape of absolute complete devastation and destruction.
Yeah, and I didn't realize the vast impact of conventional oil and gas production. Tell us, what is energy sprawl and how bad do you think that is?
Well, energy sprawl is basically the fact that producing energy takes land. And the actual footprint of a conventional oil or natural gas well is pretty small compared to the amount of energy that we get out of the ground. But the problem is we use such extraordinary amounts of energy that, you know, you start putting together oil well after oil well after thousands of more oil wells and natural gas wells, and pretty soon, you know, here in the U.S., we're talking about tens and tens of thousands of oil and gas wells. There are parts of the country where basically you can look from horizon to horizon and see nothing but oil wells or gas wells. And these are places typically where not very many people live. So, again, it's not a landscape that most people are likely to see.
And I think if you start driving down those back roads, you might run into a few security cars and people wondering what the heck you're doing there. So
that's right.
It's not easy to get to. Well, we should mention there's also a collection of great essays in the book. You're a contributing author. We're going to hear more from you in a speech that we're going to broadcast later in this program. But would you like to talk about a couple of the other written contributors?
Well, sure. We're proud to feature essays from quite a number of energy experts, including Charles Hall, who is one of the originators of the net energy or energy return on energy invested concept, which really transforms our whole view of energy, the economic as well as the environmental costs of energy. There's an essay by James Hansen on coal and climate change. Wendell Berry has a wonderful essay called Faustian Economics, Hell Hath No Limits. There are essays by Jeff Goodell, Sandra Steingraber, who's one of the great activists working against hydrofracking, David Hughes, who is a post-carbon institute fellow, he's a geologist and one of the world experts on hydrofracking and the limits to that technology. Oh, just looking through the table of contents here, Amory Lovins on energy efficiency, Bill McKibben on climate change.
These are all the big names, really, in each field, all writing good essays. And I was taken in the paper by that former CIA director, James Woolsey. He says we're ready to spend billions fighting malevolent groups like Al-Qaeda, but we're unwilling to even talk about what he calls the malignant threats, like the system collapse of things, maybe our electric grid or the climate. But Richard Heinberg, haven't you experienced that unwillingness to look or act for years?
Well, sure. Yeah, I've been writing about these issues for over a decade now, and clearly there is a small audience out there, relatively small audience of people who get it, who are deeply concerned. As I put it in my introduction to the book, energy is at the core of the human predicament in the 21st century. Whether we're talking about climate change, whether we're talking about geopolitics, whether we're talking about the economy, energy is right at the heart of it. And yet, here we are in 2013 with basically the same energy priorities as in 1990 or 1980 or 1960. Basically, fossil fuels as our primary energy sources. And we have no plan B. We literally have no realistic energy policy in this country. And the same is true in most countries around the world. We're going in the wrong direction, and we're hitting the gas pedal as we go.
Right. And I noticed in the book, despite the hard-headed figures on world energy sources and things like return on energy investment, which are very important, I was surprised by the photos and essays on the importance of wild places and the species that live there. Is it partly a return to the old environmentalism?
Well, you know, partly that reflects the priorities of our partnering organization, the Foundation for Deep Ecology. But also, you know, I think as society becomes more and more urbanized, it's easier and easier for us just to forget the impact of our activities on wild nature. You know, we don't see as much of wild nature as we used to because so many of us live in big cities. And so, you know, out of sight, out of mind. I think it's really important that we be reminded of the incredible beauty of the places that we're losing at an accelerating rate.
And I notice along those lines, the flagship website and discussion spot for the Post-Carbon Institute has changed from the well-known Energy Bulletin to a completely new site, resilience.org. What does that change mean?
Well, resilience.org is hopefully a much more useful and user-friendly site because you can delve into news and essays in several different areas, for example, energy, economy, environment, food and water, and society. So you can click on any one of those tabs and see, you know, the latest discussion, news, essays in each of those areas. So we are looking at a global systemic crisis that has many dimensions to it. Energy, as I said earlier, is at the heart of it, but even the energy question has its economic and social and environmental implications. So being able to pick those things apart and put them back together is, we think, really useful. There's also an interactive map there on the site that can take you to organizations in your vicinity that are doing the kind of work that we're helping to publicize and promote around the country, but resilience building efforts, sustainability building efforts, like the transition towns, for example. We have all of the transition towns mapped, but also local food organizations and local energy co-ops and so on.
Well, that sounds really useful. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with energy author and lecturer Richard Heinberg. He's a senior fellow with the Post Carbon Institute. We're talking about a massive new book called Energy, Overdevelopment, and the Delusion of Endless Growth, just published by PCI. Richard, I want to pose a kind of devil's advocate question, maybe a hard question. This big book of energy explains fossil fuels have powered the boom in human population as well. But at the same time, many of the arguments against some forms of energy, including solar or wind, in the book, with the photos, seem to be based partly on aesthetics. The pipes and the windmills look bad. Doesn't that imply we might have to have a lot fewer people if we cut back on fossil fuels, in part to support these aesthetic principles of what nature should look like? Do you see what I'm getting at there?
Yeah, you know, aesthetics sounds so ephemeral. It sounds so she-she and, you know, like only rich people can afford nice views. So, you know, worrying about how things look is really elitist. But, you know, I think that's a very short-sighted way of looking at the situation. If we continue as we are now, basically all places of natural beauty are going to be impacted. There will be no beauty left. And is beauty all that important? Well, you know, actually, I think it is. I think it's what feeds our soul. It's what makes life worth living. And if we are taking away the very things that make life worth living, if we're scrubbing the environment of all of those elements, then, you know, what kind of legacy is that? Is that really a sign of an intelligent species? So will we get to a point where we must reduce human population? Yeah, I think we're getting to that point. We're at 7.1 billion humans now and marching as rapidly as we can toward 9 or 10 billion. And we're already at the point where we have saturated the natural world with our impacts. If we're smart, one of the most important things we'll do over the course of the next few decades is take population seriously and take steps to limit human numbers.
Richard Heinberg, can people read the essay separately without buying the big book?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We will be publishing them online on resilience.org as time goes on. But if folks want to just read the essays, there's no better way than to buy the Energy Reader book, which is basically, it's all the verbal content of the big book. It doesn't have obviously all of the photographs, but it has all of the essays plus two or three extra essays. And the Energy Reader is really designed to be used as a resource for college and high school classes on energy and related subjects, and it is being picked up by I don't have the latest figure, but you know, dozens of sustainability classes and energy classes around the country.
I sure wish it had been there when I went to school. We didn't learn any of this. Let's be frank. I mean, if nuclear is too dangerous, and I think we can agree on that after Fukushima, and oil and gas will run out eventually, that's undeniable. Hydro has its risks. Do you see an energy source available to keep us going safely? And if not, what are we supposed to do?
We have many, many energy sources available, some obviously better than others, some renewable, some non-renewable. The problem is, of course, we're concentrating on the wrong energy sources. We should be using renewable energy to a much greater degree. But, you know, when you really get to the nub of it, the problem is not the energy sources. The problem is overconsumption. We've gotten used to using so much energy that even if we get it all from renewable sources, there are very steep environmental costs to pay. With solar photovoltaic, for example, we're getting energy from the sun. But manufacturing and deploying solar panels on a massive scale has environmental impacts, whether it's from the resource depletion of manufacturing them or the changed landscapes of putting acres and acres of these things, thousands of acres ultimately. Either way, it's going to have an impact. So what we really need to do, the conversation we need to have is, well, yes, about energy sources, but also about how much energy do we really need to use in order to maintain acceptable levels of comfort and convenience? And that's a question so far that we've not been willing to discuss. The assumption is that we have to grow our economy. We have to have more and more people every year living the way Americans do, driving cars on highways and air conditioning their homes and so on. If we stay on that treadmill, it's going to be a very, very bleak future. And the only way we're going to get off of that treadmill is to start talking about and thinking about discussing how to use less.
Well, I'd like to start wrapping up because I want people to hear the speech that you gave at the Chicago Great Lakes Bioneers Conference. First of all, are there any websites that you'd like to give out for people to follow up? But secondly, I just want to ask you, what are you working on right now? Is there some interest that you have that you're developing that you can tell us about?
Well, sure. I am working on a new book right now, and it's called Snake Oil, and it's about the current drilling boom in North Dakota and also the shale gas boom. There's been a lot of discussion in the press recently about how this will make America energy independent, how we can look forward to 100 years of cheap natural gas, how the U.S. is new Saudi Arabia, and so on. We're doing some very thorough analytic work at Post Carbon Institute. We've purchased proprietary databases, so we have production data on 65,000 oil and gas wells. And in crunching the numbers, we're coming to very different conclusions. We're looking at decline rates of 60% to 80% in the first year of production for these unconventional oil and gas wells. It looks from where we're sitting like another pyramid scheme. It's another financial bubble like the housing bubble of the mid-2000s, and it's going to end similarly. So this is what I'm writing about. I'm hoping that the book will be out. Well, we're looking at a real fast track for this book, so hopefully by summer of 2013.
We've been talking with Richard Heinberg, one of the thought leaders behind A World Without Fossil Fuels. He's at the Post Carbon Institute and at richardheinberg.com, and he's in the new book, Energy Overdevelopment and the Delusion of Endless Growth. Richard, thank you for sharing your time with us, and I forgive you for sending me the biggest book I've ever owned.
Well, thank you, Alex. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.